At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Warning, the following profanity is contained within a podcast.
This week's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by the new hymnal delivery service for people who aren't aroused by church services anymore, 4hymns, with an N. 4hymns. Heath already used this pun on Gam, but it was too apropos not to recycle for this bit. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
It's Thursday.
It's September 3rd.
And it's International Bowling League Day.
All right, big ups to a sport. It's played with a pitcher of beer and a plate of nachos.
There you go. That's how Heath plays golf as well. I'm no illusions.
I'm Eli Bosnick.
I'm Heath Enright. And from Grover, Cleveland's, New Jersey, Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Waycross, Georgia, this is The Scathing Atheist.
On this week's episode, Donald Trump asks for a little of that rendering unto Caesar he's heard so much about.
Girl Scouts of America get some blowback about their Islamic Badges for Hadges program.
And we'll read about J.D. Vance's fucking mamma for you.
First, the diatribe.
All right, I know I'm a little late to this funeral, but we're recording earlier now to accommodate all the video editing, which means that by the time that we learned Dolly Parton had died, we had already written last week's show. And this is some mourning that I want in on, even if it's late. See, I actually have an ever so slight personal connection with Dolly. I worked at the Dollywood theme park for 3 summers. And I guess it would be an exaggeration to say I'd met her, but I did interact with her on 2 separate occasions. And on the second interaction, which was 2 years after the first, she remembered me. And honestly, pretty much everybody who worked at that park for more than a year or two had a story about her like mine. A moment where she wowed them with how personable and accessible and unassuming she was. And I mean, I get that this is all stage managed, right? She's protecting the brand with these interactions. She knows these park employees are going to talk to park guests and tell them what an awesome person she is. But who fucking cares? I mean, at a certain point, we're all who we pretend to be, aren't we? And the fact that you want people to see you as personable and accessible and unassuming, that says a lot about who you are, regardless of what you're like on your own time. And here's the thing. Here's how I tie this back into the subject of the show. The Dollywood theme park was super Christian. Crazy. There's a chapel in the park that holds services in case you need a little extra Christianity between roller coasters. The company's mission statement is explicitly Christian. The park employs a chaplain. The gift shop labeled their shot glasses as toothpick holders, lest they endorse the sin of alcohol. Oh, here's the greatest example. Despite the fact that Dolly's Vicious was available for purchase on every imaginable type of kish, not a single one of them anywhere in the park showed visible cleavage. Despite the fact that it was Dolly Visible Cleavage Parton on them. I mean, the park was unapologetically Christian, but above that, beyond that, more than that, it was humanist. I'll give you a great example. While I was working there, the park got a bit of negative press over a pro-gay marriage t-shirt. An employee at the adjacent water park saw somebody wearing a t-shirt that was in support of gay marriage, and they told him that they had to turn the t-shirt inside out or leave the park, because they have a policy there against offensive t-shirts. Now, this is 2011, right? This is sort of the peak of the gay marriage controversy in America. Or I don't know, maybe it's the previous peak. Who the fuck knows where we're going at this point? But the point is that at this point, being against gay marriage was a Christian imperative. And I have no doubt that the Splash Mountain employee was responding to complaints from other Christian guests at the park that saw that t-shirt and got pissed about it. And by the rules of the park, that's the right thing to do. Any t-shirt that's offending guests is banned, regardless of whether the offended people are assholes. But then Dolly heard about it. And Dolly was an unabashed, vocal supporter of the LGBTQ community, and she was damned to hell if she was going to let an establishment carrying her name stand for homophobic bigotry. So she issued an official apology. She had the park's leaders come out on camera, stand shoulder to shoulder with her and say that everybody was welcome at Dollywood. And a couple of days later, a representative came by and chatted with me and my team at our booth to make sure that we understood this policy of inclusivity, just like they did with every other vendor in the park. And if we measure Christian by what the majority of Christians do, what the Bible says, what the majority of Christians would say is Christian, and what the majority of Christian leaders would say, that was not the Christian thing to do. The Christian thing to do is stand by the employee and ban the t-shirt. But what she did was undeniably the humanist thing to do, because as Christian as Dolly was, what motivated her was her humanity, not her Christianity. And that's a statement I think she would agree with me on. She was all about inclusivity. She would never claim that she had some special religious monopoly on ethics that was unavailable to atheists or Muslims or Hindus. Hell, as the t-shirt story demonstrates, her humanity often had to overcome her religion. And I say all of this because I'm seeing her held up as an exemplar of the good Christian an awful lot, even by secular people, right? I've seen people comparing Dolly Christians with Donald Christians, and that kind of pisses me off. Christianity doesn't deserve any more credit for her morality than big boobs or blonde wigs. Yes, she was a Christian, but the humanitarianism didn't come from that. It came from the humanity. It's right there in the fucking name. And when we call her a good Christian, we're not just laundering the ethics of her religion. We're also taking focus off the fact that she was a good person and that that is what matters.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight are the Gumby and Pokey of this podcast, Heath Enright and Eli Bosnick. Fellas, are you ready to show the folks what you can do today?
I like to kick, stretch, and kick. I'm 45, motherfuckers. Let's do this.
And I think I'm the horse,
you
right?
Are the horse.
That was all. Okay, horse, cool. Yeah. I think it is in the name. All right. Checking.
In our lead Stop story tonight, the Catholic Church seems to be hoping that if they drag it out long enough, we are going to forget that their primary function between the 1950s and the 1990s was child rape. Which is why it's super important that we keep talking about every step along the way, this tiny shred of accountability that they're facing 3/4 of a century too late. Which is why we're going to open up this week with a story about the farcical bullshit standing between the church's victims and the court-ordered settlement the Archdiocese of New Orleans was ordered to pay last year. This settlement was supposed to amount to about $2.4 million per victim, but after a bunch of bankruptcy shenanigans, that number is down to a bit over a quarter of that, if they're lucky.
Yeah, a lot of people would find it tricky to designate themselves the moral center of their community and the universe while spending the last year trying to underpay the children that you've already admitted that you raped.
Mm-hmm.
But not the Catholic Church.
Yeah, the communities are crazy, too. Apparently, lots of communities are like, yeah, I guess we could find a backup moral center. But these guys really threaded that needle.
Yeah.
Like, that's impressive. I'm kind of busy this week. Let's
go see what they're doing.
Yeah, let's do the free crackers. Where are we going to get free crackers?
So, first of all, a quick thanks to Owen for being the first to send this story to scathingnews@gmail.com. Owen, for sending us this story, I will thank you for sending it to us on air. Because unlike some people, I don't make promises I can't keep.
Oh, yeah. How's Heath's birthday present coming?
How's Stormy's possum nipple pizza coming? They've been waiting for a fucking year, Eli.
Okay, possums are fast, okay? You can't just order the nipples. People stop replying to your emails. So you have to get a whole possum.
Eli, how's my last year's birthday present going?
But this year's was so good.
It was very good.
If you think about it.
Okay, mm-hmm. so weird to try to steer us back to the child rape story at this point. But yes, that is where we're going. Back in 2021.
My birthday present from last year.
Louisiana opened a so-called look back window that allowed child sex abuse victims to seek compensation from the Catholic Church, even though the statute of limitations for their crime had expired, which is incredibly fucked up. Because the other option was to get rid of the finish line for child rapists.
Why would we have that?
I don't know. Why would we ever have had it? And why would we keep keeping it? But they did that. And the New Orleans Archdiocese promptly declared bankruptcy. And that left their victims little choice but to take their claims to bankruptcy court.
Oh, you're affected by being raped as a child forever? Okay, fine. I declare bankruptcy forever. Are you happy now?
No?
Yep, what? That's the story. Yeah. So naturally, so the Archdiocese pulled every bullshit shenanigan they can think of because as an institution, they've evidenced literally no regret or contrition whatsoever about their child rape cabal. They haven't continued to fight their victims' efforts at recompense every step of the fucking way, which they absolutely wouldn't do if they had a modicum of morality. But eventually, they begrudgingly agreed to a settlement, and they promised to start compensating victims by the end of spring 2026, which you'll notice were way the fuck past.
Yeah, it's in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And only this past week did they even start sending out letters telling their victims the pittance that they were going to receive now.
Small font, mumble, grumble, here's your money, grumble.
Blah, 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 blah. Give the rape money like you mean it. Like you mean it. Seriously, I need a court ruling for that. Like, yeah. Ruling, they have to give the full amount on national television and give it like they mean it. And they have to say
absolutely. Now, admittedly.
They say it good. Try again.
When it comes time to dole out a lump sum to a bunch of different sex abuse victims, there's no way to do it that isn't going to have its problems.
Yes. And I would be the first to admit my suggestion of great big checks taste. I withdraw it and I apologize.
Okay. I do not withdraw the showcase showdown idea. Oh, I think that could be good.
Deal or no deal.
You get like two.
Okay. All right. Well, that's really close to what they did.
The banker's the Pope.
Jeopardy. All right. What are we doing?
But see, the thing that they wound up on is maybe as fucked up as anything that you guys suggested, because what they ended up with was a point scale system where, like, getting raped is worth 75 points and digital penetration is worth 56 and getting groomed is worth 5.
Yikes.
That's the actual fucking system. You know, it has to be fucked up for abuse victims to see that, like, you know, you only got a B minus on your rape or whatever. Also, there's a guy who was anally and orally raped by multiple priests and only scored a 98. And he's rightly asking, hey, this is a 100 scale. What the fuck does it take to get full marks on this test?
Okay, since you asked, Craig, you hardly required grooming.
Oh, 98, Jesus.
Okay?
Also, that priest was like super hot. Come on.
Oh, God.
Come on.
Craig.
You're being weird.
Craig,
now, are you happy now?
As to the delay, yeah, right. Yeah. Now, as to the delay in payment, the settlement trust says it was the Archdiocese that made the promise to have it done by July, not them. According to the head of that trust, quote, any promises made by the debtor were not made by the settlement trust. The settlement trust was not consulted by the debtor prior to making these uninformed promises, end quote. Which is so close to, that's what you get for trusting a bunch of child rapists, that I wonder if that wasn't the first draft.
When I was selling drugs, sometimes people would be like, oh, you're going to give me the bag and then my buddy is going to pay you for it when he gets here.
Mm-hmm,
That's what the church is doing to the children they raped, in case anyone's following.
And by the way,
you're just like the victims. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. No, you
thank
are.
You.
Yeah, you've been
how many
lot.
Points?
So, by the way, there are a lot more shenanigans going on here. Like the letters that the victims are receiving are just showing an amount and not how it was tallied. So they have the right to appeal the amount, but without knowing how they arrived at it, they don't know what to appeal. Plus, there's an incredibly horseshit stipulation that says if you want to appeal, you have to pay $1,000 out of pocket for that, for the right to appeal. So I feel like we still might have more follow-ups on this story before they actually see their money.
And in Agamemnon, King of Kings news.
Okay, that's really fucking good, dude.
In his latest campaign fundraising email blast, Donald Trump explained how giving him money is actually an important act of Christian faith as described in the Bible. Okay, wait. No, let me start over. Kind of buried the lead there. Donald Trump is doing campaign fundraising.
Yeah, right
now, for some reason. I guess in theory, he might use that money to help his fellow Republicans who are eligible to run for their office. But that theory doesn't make me feel better. It just doesn't. Either way, he's literally claiming that he's endorsed by God politically. The same God who threw in that loss to Biden as a smokescreen. And
dramatic tension.
Also, God's super PAC is a bit low on cash and people... You got to put some money in the hat. I'm passing around the hat right now. What the fuck is happening?
Okay, I mean, to be fair, from the first time the Almighty God made himself known to man from the mountaintop, he's been asking to borrow some money until he gets his next check.
No, that,
right?
that tracks. Yeah, yeah. Also, to be clear, in 2018, Trump did the same fucking thing and gave a pittance to the actual midterm candidates. So yes, in addition to tanking the economy in a snit, starting exactly the war he campaigned on not starting, endorsing weak candidates and torpedoing established ones, he's also sponging up fundraising dollars.
Like, that's good stuff.
Right. Like, if he was a Democratic operative trying to ensure that Republicans lose, I don't know what he would be doing differently.
Feels like exactly the same.
Well, I mean, he wouldn't be like leaning into the bigotry that they love so much. But other than that, that part does.
Yeah. So here's the actual message that went out to Trump's list of potential supporters and also people who got signed up for insane emails, probably by Eli, I must assume.
Prank war.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this one I did not block that you signed me up for. I've had to block lots. This one I'm keeping. Yes. It begins, quote, "When the storms came, my trust was in something far greater than politics. Hi."
I'm self-appointed God King Donald Trump. And did you know you could get tax-free money out of your mortgage?
Yeah, right. So I feel like we're too late for high at this point after the storms come.
Starts with high after the storms come.
Yeah. Hello today.
Continuing for real.
So we're going to talk about it.
That was real. Hi. Since the day I returned to the White House, I have felt the mighty hand of God guiding this movement.
Which is great because my tiny ass little hands couldn't guide shit even before Quado started trying to pop out of whatever the fuck's going on here.
His word reminds us, if God is for us, who can be against us? That sounds violent. The enemies of freedom thought they could break us with lies, with weaponized courts, with endless persecution, but they were wrong. The early patriots faced impossible odds, but they stood together with unyielding courage. We must do the exact same, united by prayer, united by conviction, united under God.
I love it when they write an email from him that uses words he couldn't pronounce at gunpoint, right? Donald Trump thinks a weaponized court is giving Samuel Alito a gun instead of a gavel.
Sure, sure. But like most of his supporters also don't know what any of these words mean, and they just like words with weapon in them generally. That's probably the logic.
It's a simple audience. And from there, Trump alludes to a passage from the Bible about faith, but it wasn't... wasn't the best pick. He went with the mustard seed thing.
Mm.
Huh. So in the book of Matthew, we learn from Jesus Christ, the Son of God, that mustard seeds are the smallest of all seeds on earth. They're not. They're not. Regardless, we're told later that a tiny amount of faith, tiny like a mustard seed, can move mountains and also make a mulberry tree commit suicide. It's confusing the tree part. They kind of muddled it with that part. But Trump had already introduced the word seed.
Oh,
he really
Jesus.
Wanted to use the sweet segue. Here's how I went in email. Quote, so here's the deal.
Okay. Morgan, if Donald Trump says we're going to talk about it, don't do the freeze frame thing. Okay. I don't want him to have that.
So here's the deal. I need you with me right now. And then there's a donate button. When you stand with this movement, you are doing far more than joining a political effort. You are sowing a seed, I'll use that later, of faith into the future of our nation. The Bible tells us that faith as small as a mustard seed can move mountains. Together, our faith will move America back to God, back to truth, back to greatness.
Okay, so he just filled out a prosperity gospel form letter with politics words.
Exactly. Exactly.
Jesus.
And just for the record, this email was just one of many times that Trump's been selling himself as a divinely chosen messenger and talking about how God saved him from a bullet by having it just miss him and kill a firefighter. About a month ago, Trump sent out a similar fundraising blast that started with, "Friend, I want to try and get to heaven. I came millimeters from death when that bullet pierced through my skin in 2024.
Okay, your ear skin, you big baby.
It's literally a thing little girls do as a rite of passage, man. Jesus.
My triumphant return to the White House was never supposed to happen, but I believe that God saved me for one reason, to make America great again.
Okay, I feel like God just felt like TV got boring without you, and to be fair, it did. It did.
Yeah, so that one was from last month. Circling back to this latest email, here's how Trump wraps it up. Quote,
If you cannot give right now, I want you to know your prayers, your faith, and your unwavering support mean more to me than all the money in the world. And then he signs off with a photo of himself. It says, thank you and may God bless you. His headshot is next, Donald John Trump. And then there's another button to donate. So, yeah, I think we don't talk about this enough. I think religion is bad. Like that bad.
Oh, okay.
Might be.
Like,
yeah,
like
might
even
be
if you're dealing with a really shitty mulberry tree, like an impertinent as fuck mulberry tree who deserves it, it might still be a net negative to have religion around. I'm just saying.
Might not be worth it. Might not. And in garden women's rights news, New Jersey governor, Montclair residents, and my personal best friend, who I have now met twos of times, Come Mickey on. Sherrill.
Oh, one.
It's Mikey Sherrill, and both times you didn't get the right name, I guess.
I may or may not have pronounced her name correctly, but I know that I made an impression because she didn't like me that much. She did it anyways.
That tracks.
That's okay. What's important. What's important is now that she signed a law this week, thank you, that makes it a crime to get in the way of anyone accessing or providing reproductive or gender-affirming healthcare. So you know what that means.
What are the guys talking about? It's the newest, the greatest Christian freakout.
That's right. Christians are freaking out. And before we get to the lies they're telling about this bill, we should point out that they are actually freaking out for a great reason.
Well, yeah, the bill doesn't say anything about Christian people or religion specifically, but it's entirely about Christian people and religion specifically. It's like it's HR doing an office-wide racial sensitivity training just for Michael Scott.
Right.
The bill. Yeah. That's what
this
is. Yeah.
Like everything else about my home state except the traffic, this bill is awesome.
Oh, we're going to pretend that everybody just forgot about Jersey Shore. You have to do so much fucking civil rights to make up for Jersey Shore, dude. First,
those guys were from Long Island, and they also were in
Jersey
Shore is Long Island with sand. It's
they were adorable. Death of
Long
culture.
Island
and I think
has sand. Yeah,
they got a little bit of sand, but it's just for rich people.
It's true. It puts into place real consequences for bigots. The bill, not Jersey Shore. Although, to be fair, in the long term, if Jersey Shore also put into place consequences for bigots.
That's fair.
But the bill, it puts into place real consequences for bigots who try to physically intimidate people from getting the health care they need by blocking doors, driveways, and other entrances with their bodies. Violators face criminal penalties ranging from 18 months up to 5 years in prison if their obstruction caused a victim serious bodily harm, but there's more. Those individuals would also be exposed to civil suits from the victim and the state, with a minimum of $1,000 per violation, plus attorney's fees, injunctive relief, and if they can prove willful or reckless disregard for the law, punitive damages. Last, but certainly not least, if the suit comes from a local, state, or county prosecutor, and it very obviously would, violators would face a fine of up to $10,000 for a first offense and $25,000 for subsequent ones.
Okay. That makes up for Vinny. You'll have to paint the fucking turnpike in rainbows before we forgive you for the situation, but that makes up for Vinny. We're getting there.
Understandable. Remember, he would do this because his tummy, he had a nice tummy. Mm. And he was like, look at my nice tummy. Like a child. So let's get to the Christian lie, because even these idiots know they're not going to garner any sympathy with, it's like you can't even fight a child on the way to their life-saving healthcare anymore. So this is how Marie Tassi, executive director of the anti-abortion group New Jersey Right to Life, described the bill. Quote, peaceful sidewalk counseling, prayer, holding signs, or simply offering help and alternatives outside a facility can easily be labeled intimidation by someone who claims to feel threatened, leaving pro-life advocates open to criminal charges that are difficult to disprove and chilling constitutionally protected expression, end quote.
When can you fight a child? No, okay. We're brainstorming. I heard it. I didn't love it. Well, just Marie's thing, probably.
Yeah.
She kind of like
the implication here seems to be like, wait, well, what are you supposed to do? None of the things that could easily be labeled intimidation? Give me a fucking break here.
Right? Yeah. And of course,
A bunch of other Christians have since joined in on the lying as well. Anti-abortion activist and failed Planned Parenthood video gotcha creator Lila Rose tweeted about it.
Cool.
LifeSite News ran an article with the headline, New Jersey Governor Mickey Sherrill signs bill. They pronounce her name too wrong, too.
They pronounce it's not her wrong headline.
They do it like me. They learned it from me.
Yeah, they phonetically spelled it out wrong in the headline. Got it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. New Jersey Governor Mickey Sherrill signs bill banning praying outside abortion centers. Right-wing group 40 Days for Life announced that it would pay the legal bills for any Christians arrested under this law, assuming their protest was peaceful, which is nothing.
Can't
because
be. Definitionally.
Because peaceful protesters wouldn't be violating the law under this bill. And late addition, none other than Kevin Sorbo.
He's alive still.
I bet it was witless.
Yeah. Wow. He tweeted, quote, New Jersey just passed a bill that says you can no longer pray silently near Planned Parenthood. They are officially changing their state motto from the Garden State to the Murder State.
Got him.
Congratulations.
Yeah, super clever. Okay, Jersey should just lean in and actually do that and be like, well, yeah, we're the Murder State. Like, Virginia's for lovers and Jersey is for killing the baby when you're done in Virginia.
Yeah.
Get some tourism, put that on some billboards up and down I-95. And then you go to New York for dinner to celebrate.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Kevin, they don't exist, but if and when they do, we will make an exception to any law against being silent anywhere if you're the one shutting the fuck up. Okay.
Oh,
I guarantee
that. That's how they'd
that.
Get us. That's how they'd get us. One last thing about this story, and I know it's like a personal thing, so forgive me. Governor Sherrill actually signed this bill at my personal favorite Planned Parenthood in the state.
Do you have a favorite?
I do. The one right near Montclair State University in downtown Montclair. Now, some of you might be thinking, like my co-host, that it is odd to have a favorite Planned Parenthood.
I'm not against it, but yeah, I'm curious.
But you would be wrong.
Okay.
Because thanks to traffic laws and the positioning of this Planned Parenthood, when Christian bigots want to protest there, they have to stand on this tiny little island in the center of a traffic intersection.
Nice work, Montclair.
And when the extremely liberal residents of Montclair see them there, because the only people ever there are the anti-abortion loons, they honk at them and they scream at them to fuck themselves, and it rocks. It's just the fucking best. It's great.
Okay, hey, Montclair, maybe add like a ring of parking around the island as a honking lot.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Like, just also, you know, whatever other word lot. I don't know. You brainstorm.
Salem's lot. Bunch of cats popping out of graves at them. So, yeah, it's bad to be a bigot in New Jersey, and it just got worse. But be warned, podcast listener, if this takes off and that protest spot is really close to my favorite gelato place. So if those motherfuckers ever start blocking that door, the one to my favorite gelato place, I'm just saying they'll be begging to be thrown in prison. Okay, so
there you go. And since we're already on the misogyny subject, I guess it's a fine time to hand things over to my lovely wife, Lucinda.
A man wrote the Bible.
A whore is what she was.
If it's a legitimate rape,
it makes her a slut, right?
Cooking can be fun.
Hey, I'm proud of a man.
This week in misogyny.
A lot of Christians like to write in and say that their religion isn't as bad as we make it out to be, that we're cherry picking to make it sound worse than it is. And of course we are. That's our whole thing. It would be insane for us to end the show with a list of very nice interactions preachers had at soup kitchens to balance shit out. We're not here to give an objective assessment of the pros and cons of religion. We're here to point out that it's bullshit. And very often it's dangerous bullshit. But if you do want an objective yardstick to measure Christianity by, just look at who feels welcome in your group. Like when famous Christians are accused of sexual assault and abusing their partners, they don't turn to an atheist community that's welcoming them in with open arms. But the Russell Brands and Shia LaBeoufs of the world sure as hell get a warm welcome when they strap on the cross, don't they? Well, I've got a lesser known name to add to that list for you this week. Ricky Fisher is a former San Diego sheriff's deputy that made the news twice. The first time was almost a decade ago when more than 20 women came forward to accuse him of sexual assault and abuse. His victims included women he'd pulled over, women who had called the police for help, and just women he encountered on the street. Then he made the news again a couple years later when he pled guilty to 16 felonies and misdemeanors. But not the ones that represented the worst charges against him. He managed to plead down to stuff that wouldn't even technically count as sex crimes. Then he got an absurdly light sentence of 44 months. And victims and their advocates were so appalled at how lenient that was that it made national news again. And then there was another blip when he got out of jail after serving less than half of it. Well, now he's blipping again because he just got hired to work as a chaplain for Christian cops. The Christian Law Enforcement Fellowship describes itself on its website as, quote, a non-denominational Christian organization committed to a biblically oriented outreach to the law enforcement community of San Diego County, end quote. A phrasing they may want to reconsider after hiring a guy whose noteworthy outreach was mostly grabbing women's crotches. And this isn't a case where they just didn't vet their hire. They knew perfectly well who he was. They're the group that ministered to him while he was in jail. And on their website, they sell his story as a Christian redemption story, though they euphemize forcing domestic abuse victims to perform oral sex on him, all the way down to facing some extremely challenging situations in his bio. But here's the thing. From all accounts, he was super duper Christian before he was convicted too. He didn't find Jesus in prison. He didn't reform his gambling, cussing, drinking ways. There's no redemption arc here. There's just a flat line where a rapist got away with it. And when asked about this by the Associated Press, the fellowship's president said, quote, did he do something wrong? Absolutely, yes. But we are all sinners. We all deserve God's forgiveness, end quote. And look, we're only all sinners because y'all added a bunch of stupid-ass rules against thinking shit and being gay. We're not all rapists. And the only reason we all deserve God's forgiveness is because God is pretend. This motherfucker sure as hell doesn't deserve our forgiveness. And from what his victims say, he hasn't even sought theirs. Anyway, just another case of Christianity being the last place that a shitty person feels welcome. And apologies because I had other stories I wanted to get to, but this story was too fucked up to summarize. So I guess that with the promise that I at least have a head start now, if no misogyny happens before next week, I can hand you back over to Noah, Heath, and Eli.
And finally tonight in Cookie Islam news.
What?
No idea.
They're Cookie Slam. What? There are very few organizations. Well, still, it's where you bite the ends off a cookie and then you drink a yummy drink through it. It's a thing in Australia, especially, but you can do it with your Girl Scout cookies and it's really yummy. And my joke was amazing.
That sounds like a good idea.
How many sentences I like that. I'm glad we clarified. You know what they say? If you have to explain your joke really fast and really quiet, it's the funniest thing anyone's ever said.
For the next minute or two.
And then you spend the rest of your podcast in a pout. It's because of how funny and great it was. Mickey Sherrill. Quick dash. Mickey Sherrill. My best friend. There are very few organizations as obviously great for the world as the Girl Scouts of America. Unlike their masculine counterpart, the Girl Scouts teach valuable skills for people who don't need to climb a rope upside down. They've avoided becoming a symbol of Christian nationalism, homophobia, and religious bigotry, all while not having a devastating and prevalent child abuse problem.
Except for the severe child labor thing they do. But like, other than that,
basically, they're proof that religious people are full of shit when they apologize for their own shit.
Okay, so as awesome as the Girl Scouts actually are, they're mostly useful as an example of how low the fucking bar is now. Holy shit.
Sure, but it's a nice bar. It's a low. It's
the cookies are good.
The cookies are great. Yeah. Okay, so it is no surprise that when religious people learned that the Girl Scouts offer a badge about learning about other cultures this week, those Christians took the opportunity to lose their minds and cry Sharia law about it.
Fuck's sake.
Obviously not what happened. To be clear, a Girl Scout got a badge for like making a falafel or something. And some Christian lunatic heard about that and was like, you did 9/11.
Yes, exactly.
Reporting this to Breitbart.
Yeah. Right. So first off, a big thanks to Hemet Mehta over at The Friendly Atheist for bringing this story to our attention over at The Friendly Atheist blog. You can check out his excellent work at thefriendlyatheist.com. But if you burn I Heart You into his lawn, he's a real jerk about it. So
Just a heads up.
Honestly, I think he was mostly just appalled by the spelling.
That's fair. That's fair. Right. So this panic originates, at least this week, with Steve Bannon's podcast co-host, Natalie Winters, who tweeted an exclusive scoop about, quote, the Islamization of Girl Scouts across America. The Twitter thread showed a variety of badges that, according to Winters, were for non-Muslim girls invited to mosques to observe Islamic prayer. Haji patches, Sahada lessons, required white hijabs, and Ramadan lock-ins.
Okay. It takes a special kind of person to get angry about the integrity of fabric patches that kids are getting. There's
okay,
no way.
Okay.
Come on.
I am only forgiving that slight against Her Lady, GCBWRNW, Princess Donut, the Queen Anne Chunk, because I know you haven't read the books.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Fabric patches matter, okay?
Exactly. Okay. So, as you may have guessed, the Girl Scouts do not, in fact, offer a burqa badge. What they do have is a relationship with a bunch of third-party religious organizations of a bunch of different faiths who are allowed to give out unofficial badges to girls who share and celebrate their culture, including parts of their faith.
Amazing. Okay, so this is a, like, how dare patches exist? Freak
literally,
out?
Jesus literally,
Christ.
Yeah. So, of course, a bunch of Christian liars jumped on this, which in turn meant that Girl Scouts had to release a statement clarifying, quote, there's misinformation circulating online today about Girl Scouts and religion. Here are the facts. Girl Scouts is not a religious organization and does not teach religion. For more than a century, we've welcomed girls of every faith and background. Our national My Promise My Faith pin invites girls to connect Girl Scout law with their own faith. Any other faith-based patches are developed by independent faith organizations, not Girl Scouts of the USA. Girl Scouts is proudly for every girl, end quote.
Also, I can't believe I have to do this. No, the new Explore More cookies aren't spelled like that. It's not Explore a More. It's M-O-R-E. It's one word. It's just Explore More. Idiots.
Honestly,
this is my job today.
Like,
fuck.
The phrase Explore More scares the shit out of Christians, too. Though,
yeah, they don't
really like
that. Yeah, it's a bad idea. So I think it's obvious to those of us reading between the lines that the Girl Scouts have fully fallen to the Muslim caliphate. And if we don't want to get left behind, we're going to get on board. So let's put 30 seconds on the clock.
Oh, okay.
New flavors for Sharia-themed Girl Scout cookies. Go. Tagalong dress that also covers your ankles.
Oh, that's where we're starting. That's where the bar is. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Vanilla bismillah.
Okay. Dosi Dohas.
Oh, nice. Nice.
They're kind of like Nutter Butter. They're Cutter Butters.
Yeah. Okay. Stay with me. Stay with me. FGM name.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Pepperidge Farm dismembered.
Oh,
well
there you
done,
go.
Well done. Halalman Crescents.
Ooh.
Coco Haram.
It's oh, nice. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Caramel delights my daughter on fire.
Oh, Jesus Christ, dude.
This segment
I
is off
you
the rails.
I appreciate you softened that one up before I had to go with insufficiently subservient lady fingers. These taste acidic to you.
Globalized thin mintifada. There we go.
I have to have
thin mints in this segment.
Of course.
It has to go in there somewhere.
Obviously, okay.
It's not just a Sharia thing. That's just like a phrase. But like I'm saying,
I had to get the cookie
in there. It's a really good cookie.
And with a quick reminder that of all the things that the Girl Scouts gave us, the best one was our favorite listener, April Poff. We're going to wrap up the headlines for the night. Eli Heath, thanks as always.
Jumanji.
And when we come back, the couches will have slip covers padlocked into place. Don't worry. Of all the things I've learned doing this podcast, perhaps the one that surprises me the most is just how long it can take to read a book if you really don't want to read that book. Speaking of which, it's time for another installment of
God Awful Books.
So in the last installment, we cracked open J.D. Vance's new book, Communion, Finding My Way Back to Faith, and then we cracked it the fuck closed again. Really quick. We only made it through the introduction, so now we're going to be finally tackling chapter one, And I'll admit that the name of the first chapter was intriguing. I was in. It's chapter one. What's the matter with J.D. Vance? Never really dives into the interesting parts of that question.
Communion though. By J.D. Vance with a foreword by his couch. There you go.
And so we're all of 14 words into the very first chapter before we start to wonder if Vance raped a teenage boy. Okay, like seriously, here's the opening fucking sentences of his fucking book. Quote, some years ago, I was driving through rural Indiana with a teenaged family friend. What the fuck is a teenaged family friend?
Yeah, if you're describing children as anonymized police reports, I am suspicious.
Yes! Hey,
this is crazy. The bad guy from this Ambler I just got has the same car as me. That's what
same
is
license plate.
Anyway, tell me about your trauma, teenaged family friend who is driving through Indiana with everything about that sentence is bad.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. So, and then we make a hard left turn into that kid's mom trying to kill herself with an overdose. And we learn that Wesley, that's the kid that he raped, allegedly, grew up in one of those sub-Catholic non-denominational churches, so.
Her Christianity was cut with something far worse than fentanyl. Protestantism. Yeah.
You need faith and good works to appease God. The God who invented fentanyl. That's important.
Right.
He's going to spend the whole time doing that shit, being like, Catholic's a little bit different.
Yep.
And I like it now.
Yeah, so but that's the thing is that he's basically implying that because Wesley had the wrong type of Christianity, this wishy-washy non-denominational shit, he was blaming God for his problems, right? But we eventually turn to JD's crisis of faith because, you know, Wesley was just there to pad the word count. And what made him first start questioning God was the death of his mama.
I was saying mama, but he spells it kind of like mama. You know, like he's a whiny French person yelling for his mom.
Sure, sure, yeah.
Maman.
But Mama used to write prayers on napkins and store them by her bedside because she probably had an undiagnosed mental illness. Why the fuck?
A lot of people have bedside napkins. It's not it doesn't have to be necessarily. It could be.
What we learn here, most importantly, is that Mama was a cussing, shooting hillbilly Mama.
Okay. J.D. Vance literally grew up poor and somehow forgot how to talk like that. Mm-hmm. He sounds like me trying to pick a fight with Lucinda outside of a Waffle House. Right? Oh, my mama was a rootin' tootin'. Yeah. Come on.
So he's just
give me your bell.
He's just like, I learned what I know about theology from an old lady with 19 loaded guns in her home.
Yeah, that's right. Back in the 513 is what we said in the hood. Back, we'd say she was rootin' tootin'. That's right.
Indeed.
Full of riz. What?
Yep. But he explains that.
Let me get a glazed normal.
It's just whatever makes sense. But yeah, he explains that he's a manly man who likes guns. Not sure if he mentioned that, but he's pretty manly about his manliness.
Yeah, and speaking of guns, I started being a theologian at age 7 when my great uncle died. I realized that our soul is a bullet and our body is the casing. And God, of course, spends, most of his day shooting about like 150,000 bullets into the sky or the ground. Because, you know, heaven is up and hell is down.
And so he's going to go both ways. Yeah.
I knew what a metaphor was when I was 7.
I guess. Yeah, and then, but he explains that they were a Billy Graham family, not one of those fucking Benny Hinn families, okay?
Oh, I'm picturing, please tell me this was the Pokemon Red versus Blue for Christian kids, right?
Like New Coke versus Crystal Pepsi, yeah.
Yes, exactly, you know? Yeah.
Shit sandwich versus double shit sandwich, yeah. He's clearly just doing a retcon here to make Mama into a wise old genius who knew the whole time. Mama could just tell that Benny Hinn was a fraud, making millions from his dumb followers without actually doing any real God magic, but not Billy Graham. He would never.
Yes.
He fucks up his own retcon in retrospect.
Yeah, but there's also this amazing moment where he talks about how like Mama particularly liked one preacher in town who JD still hasn't figured out she was fucking back then.
100%, yeah.
Good old Pastor James David. That's weird. He's always checking our windows, I think, to like structurally. He would sneak out in the morning through them after he checked.
Weird.
He was always like, he wanted to make sure our windows were good on some mornings.
So that he segues into an explanation of the fusion of church and the GOP in the 70s. But here's how he does it. He goes, you know, scholars differ on how this relationship became such an important part of American society, because otherwise you'd have to admit that, no, it was just racism. Everybody pretty much agrees it was just racism.
Yeah. Okay. So there was the civil rights movement, and then we all agreed a lot more. It's a real pickle.
Yeah. So anyway, yada, yada, yada. B actor takes over and does tax cuts for rich people. It just kind of was unrelated. It just kind of worked out. Anyway, I got to go break a tie in the Senate for a big, beautiful bill.
Be right back. Yeah. So and we're on page 13 before he makes an argument for murdering babies if they go to heaven. Right. So, like, full disclosure, he's talking about the Moses story, but still.
Okay. Yes. Admittedly, God killed all those Egyptian kids to spite Pharaoh, but the kids went to heaven. Point is Arab kids getting killed from above. It's right there in the Bible.
It's important.
Just remember that for, I don't know,
anything,
whatever.
Anything. Anytime, it's just, if it happens,
yeah,
it's good.
So we're on page 13 again when he starts repeating himself, because he tells us for the second time here that Mama didn't actually go to church all that much.
Well, sure. She had all the prayer she needed on her dirty Dunkin' nap.
Well, I guess, yeah. Right.
Yeah. He says that, like, Mama lived right next to a Protestant church, but she was pretty sure the pastor was a pedophile. Anyway, let's keep going with my book about becoming Catholic, because Catholic is awesome. Right. Why would you put that in your, why add that part? Just leave that out.
He explains that Mama was okay with abortion and didn't want to outlaw everything that she didn't like. And I was like, well, she sounds like a fucking communist to me, if you ask me.
Yeah, I'm way more conservative than my barely educated pre-civil rights, gun-toting, napkin-horning mamma. She would hate me. I'm J.D. Vance.
Here's the thing with Mama. She was great. She was great. She didn't fully grasp the value of good fascism. And neither did God. And fuck Pope Leo also. Wait, no, sorry. That's for, I was doing a tweet. Let me.
Just, yes.
That was just for tweet.
So, and then we learned that JD's absentee dad was actually pretty cool, despite what Mom and Mama said about him. He totally didn't want to abandon me, guys. It's just that he had
really sad.
It, well, you know, if I had the slightest ability to feel any empathy for JD fucking Vance, this would have been so sad.
Yeah. And for those who read Hillbilly Elegy and are keeping track, that means that JD Vance has now written two books about how his dad, who abandoned him and has never, ever shown any signs that he wanted to do otherwise, could still totally come play catch if he reads this. Like,
he's out getting cigarettes, but he only likes Dunhills. They're hard. It's hard. They're like specific cigarettes. It's hard to find. Also, I'm afraid of playing catch. I'll just get hit in the face if he shows up.
He goes, like, you know, but in that church I went to as a kid, I learned a lot of very important stuff. And then he lists the important stuff he learned, and it's like, it's all shit that, like, any kid who watched Sesame Street would have picked up by age 4.
Okay, well, Elmo never throws Rocco at a woman who won't marry her husband's brother.
Okay,
so.
No, that's fair.
Okay, I loved this part. JD mentions that all that rock and roll music was too loud for him, but he devoured every word from the articulate pastor at his church. And I was like, oh my God, what a perfect window into JD Vance. He was the kid who only reads the articles of porn, but for church.
Yes. So then he tackles the question of whether Republican Christian voters vote against their own interests, right? And he answers that by ignoring the question that he himself asked. The closest he ever musters to a defense is, but abortion, though.
Which, again, is also towards their interests. Just ask J.D. Vance's dad.
Yeah, right.
Okay. This whole book, it's just calling backsies on Hillbilly Elegy, wherever that book fucks up his new Catholic fascism thing.
Really? Yeah.
Being buddies with Donald Trump. That book, Hillbilly Elegy, was already stupid, but now he has to explain, like, fuck coal miners. It's all about fetuses and crypto. I don't know. And he mentions What's the Matter with Kansas. That's the book about the working class voting against their economic interests. And the answer to the question in the title of that book is J.D. Vance's brand of religion and racism.
Yeah.
That's the matter with Kansas, idiot.
Sure is. And he also kind of admits that the war on Christmas is stupid, which is more honesty than I was expecting. I'll give him that.
Yeah. Yeah. To be fair, he has since realized that he can just start real wars for attention. Yeah, think about all the time they waste then.
Yeah. And then he explains that his dad's church taught him that Harry Potter was satanic.
Let me ask you guys a real question. Do you think if the Christians knew what she was going to do with the money, they'd have been cooler? Right. I feel like she should have led with the bigotry.
Honestly,
should have been
like
no, I'm telling
Trump.
You guys, yeah. I'm going to use all of this.
Okay.
All of it.
JD actually mentions that the church immediately hated Harry Potter, said it was satanic. And then they argued about Lord of the Rings, but they finally landed on, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien getting a pass. I
yeah,
don't know why.
He was like, he was really nervous about it, yeah, and everything. Yeah. So in high school, though, he realized that trickle down economics, that was the way to go. Guys, mm-hmm.
You remember when Jesus, what did he do? He deregulated the money changers or something. Like it was because of the laughter curve.
Yeah, no,
he came in there and he was like, your job creators.
So
they gave him a jet.
You less.
Then he grabbed his bootstraps and joined the Marines. Right. Because of all the manly badassery.
Right. Yeah. Manly badassery. Right. When he saw plenty of combat in the Marines, in the war theater, of ideas as a Marine Corps blogger. He was a blogger for the Marines.
Yeah.
They have bloggers?
Yep.
A little bit. You don't have a blog. Relax.
But I could have. Maybe they would have given me the discipline I needed to stick to my blog. I could have been the Navy SEAL of bloggers.
No, I don't think you could have. So,
the Jew, the proud.
There it is.
Can I use a hard J? For you,
yeah, you have to.
For
you have to.
Okay.
If Morgan cuts this, this is the whole next episode.
Okay. So then he takes a second to assure us that he's actually like a John Everyman and has real struggles. There's like a lot of addiction and sadness in his life, right? Because his Christian readers need a lot of excuses why he publicly called himself an atheist at any point in his past. And he explains that his first seeds of doubt appeared when he was deployed in Iraq, where you're allowed to, you know, question God.
Yeah, if there wasn't a God, why did George W. Bush dodge that shoe so good?
Mm. Oh, so fucking good. Like Neo.
I know.
The chosen one Neo. Maybe George is God.
Yeah.
Now watch my draft.
Explains a lot. But now watch this draft.
It's also this weird moment where like Mama called to say that she couldn't afford her health care. And he's like, and that's a problem I would dedicate my life to exacerbating.
When I heard those words, I thought to myself, why the hell did she have health care in the first place?
Okay, I know you're making a joke, but the answer is because working class Republicans are all quietly taking socialized bootstraps from the New Deal.
Yes.
And either pretending that it's not there or like knowing what's going on and fucking hating it because they're embarrassed.
He brings up Terri Schiavo, which I thought was insane, but like to his credit, his point was like, why were we focused on that shit when there were real problems in the world? But to his debit, the real problems that he mentioned were divorce rates and abortion.
Yeah, Terri Schiavo is like if the fetus being aborted had asked to die very clearly in legal paperwork. So it's trickier. It's trickier.
Sonogram's showing like the courts like in a noose shape. I don't know what to do.
It's crazy.
Well, but then he says he was wrong and all atheists to feel that way. So it's actually he was wrong. He's all debit. No credit for that.
The Eli Bosnick story.
Yeah, right. but he'd only been helping Mama with her bills for a few months before she died. My immediate thought was like, I bet he killed her to save himself some money, just like he did with the Pope.
But I
don't have any evidence. So, but on his way back to the base from his Mama's funeral, God almost killed him with a car accident for being all atheist and doubtful. He was on a mountain road on a dark and stormy night when, quote, some combination of speed, slickness, and bad luck sent me hurtling towards a guardrail. I'm like, some combination of you being a shitty driver.
Yeah. It's not complicated.
Yeah, no, God has punished me many times for playing Candy Crush when I drive. Yeah. It's really, that's his sign to me.
Just God standing next to Wile E. Coyote looking at J.D. Vance who stops right on the ledge. Dude, try the plunger again. I don't know, press it again. He's going to kill the Pope in a few years if we don't get this done. Right? We got to get this done.
And destroy a trophy. But he's like, you know, just when I thought I wasn't going to stop in time, I stopped in time. Right. So this is the actual quote. Something stopped it, it being the car. Something beyond my comprehension or control. And I was like, yeah, it's anti-lock braking. That's beyond your friction.
Or based on how it sounds like you were driving, it could have been the car that
Yeah, I mean, like, physics is beyond your comprehension and control, J.D. Vance. I do believe that. Also, though, you're lying. Also, none of this matters. Like, I don't die all the time.
God likes me so much I didn't even lose control. Yeah.
Not even once.
He goes, he's like, I didn't even feel the jerk of my seatbelt. And I'm like, okay, so you weren't going very fast then. I'm like, dude, this is somehow less impressive than Ross Douthat's The Overheating Battery Got Hot miracle.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, as Heath covered a couple of weeks back, Ross and JD would go on to top this story by getting a glass thrown at them by a bartender one time.
Yeah. So. Yeah, a glass broke at a bar full of glasses, because bars are full of glasses.
They tend to be.
And Ross was like, work for Barry Weiss. Got it. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be hated at the New York Times and bullied by Ezra, and then I'm going to work for Barry Weiss. That was what that meant. And JD was like, work for the guy I called America's Hitler. Got it. Got it. You clever fucking minx guy. I understand what you did with that glass breaking.
He actually says, quote, perhaps I wasn't going as fast as I felt in the moment. And I'm like, yeah, man. Yeah, that's like, that's much more plausible than the creator of the universe reached down his mighty hand to intervene and scooch my car back like a fucking Hot Wheels.
Hey, JD, just follow up question. What's the lesson from God when you just barely touched the national championship trophy and it exploded and burst of flame? So now you go back to atheist? I feel like you're not listening to the signals.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is that the story makes him sound like an idiot. But that's the point, right? He's trying to speak Rube, and this is what he's like, well, you guys sound like this when you talk, right?
Yeah, back then I was wrong about everything except the origins of the universe and the meaning of life.
Other than that, yeah. No, but brakes existing on a car or no, the death of Mama shook his faith all the way down to the atheism. And also, they moved up his deployment. So he missed his 21st birthday party, guys. White privilege my ass. This man has real problems.
Listen, my Dave and Buster's power card, it was full, and then it expired. When I could, you guys, it expired. No, and I could not get a refund. They wouldn't get it. They said no cash value. So, yeah, God is dead. That's what happened.
Yeah, right,
in case you're wondering.
He also, there's this sad moment where he's like, I couldn't tell my fellow Marines about my problems because they fucking hated me. Just fucking hated me.
Everyone was always reading the first couple chapters of Full Metal Jacket. And I was, and they were always like, hey, JD, when's the soap delivery coming in? And I was like, oh.
Oh, wait, it's not for a while with the soap delivery. Hey, JD, do you want to just kill yourself like now?
Yeah.
Like we have the soap, but the bullying, it's like, ah, oh, it's going to be a whole thing.
That is your rifle and that is your gun.
Yep.
There you go. He went to war and he left God behind. So that's the message there. All right. Well, quick, before he has to admit that what he did in Iraq was blogger, we're going to wrap up there. But we have J.D. Vance's war stories to look forward to on the next installment of
God Awful Books.
I would have been such a good war blogger.
I don't think you would.
I think you would have.
I would have made compilation clips.
The whole thing is spelling.
If Eli was in like the Strait of Hormuz right now blogging about it, and I could guarantee he wouldn't be like exploded.
Also,
that would be
Iraq was the first time that we could kind of see that the outlines were people, and that was no fun. But I would have made him into fun compilation clips with music, right? It would have been like,
yeah, no, that took the Trump administration a while to come up with that. Good shit. Before we back slowly into the bushes this week, I want to remind you that this show is available on YouTube these days in case you want to see what we look like while we're doing this shit. That being said, the audio-only version isn't going anywhere. We're expanding out into new markets, not abandoning old ones. Anyway, that's all the blasphemy we've got for you this week, but we'll be back in 10,022 minutes with more. If you can't wait that long, be on the lookout for a brand new episode of our sister show's Hot Friend God Awful Movies, debuting at 7 Eastern on Tuesday, and an even new episode of our Half-Sister Show Citation Needed, debuting at noon Eastern on Wednesday. Obviously, this show would fucking suck if I neglected to thank Heath Enright for being so credible. Eli Bosnick for being so incredible, and Lucinda Illusions for being so edible. But most of all, of course, I want to thank this week's Best Bipeds, Ghost Dive, Marie Pierre, Harry Jersey Dan, Broadfearer Means Bread Leader, Eric Kim, Dr. Hooten Anders, Ken from CT, I Am Antifa, Obo One, Logan Fam, Chani Dan, and Matt from Canada. Ghost Dive, Marie Pierre, Harry Jersey Dan, and Broadfearer, who are so smart, we all got an extra IQ point just from hearing all their names listed together like that. Eric Kim, Dr. Hooten Anders, Ken, and Antifa, who are what those Chinese robots that couldn't stop were running towards. And Obo One, Logo Fam, Chani Dan, and Matt, who are so sophisticated, their blood types are Greek letters. Together, these 15 free thinkers and families of free thinkers found it in themselves to fund our fuck festooned fippery this week by giving us money. Not everybody has the money to do that, but if you do, you can make a per episode donation at patreon.com/scathingatheist, whereby you'll earn early access to an extended ad free version of every episode, or you can make a one time donation by clicking on the donate button on the right side of the homepage at scathingatheist.com. And if you'd like to help, but all your money's tied up in Trump's dick waving contest with Iran, you can also help a ton by leaving a 5-star review, telling a friend about the show, and following us on social media. And speaking of social media, Tim Robertson and Lily Bosnick handle that for us. Our cartoonist is Angelo Madrid from Madrid Tunes, and our audio engineer is Martin Clark, who also wrote all the music that was used in this episode, which was used with permission. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the content info on the content page at scathingatheist.com.
We'll know when we go viral because I'll get fired from my teaching job and our lives will get easier.
Right. No, that'll be the metric.
This content is scanned credentialed, which means you can report instances of harassment, abuse, or other harm to their hotline at 617-249-4255 or on their website at creatoraccountabilitynetwork.org. This podcast is a production of Puzzle and a Thunderstorm LLC and was created without the use of generative AI. Its contents may not be used for AI training. Copyright 2026, all rights reserved.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Hey, let's talk about something a lot of us deal with, thinning hair or hair loss. If that sounds familiar, CAPS has solutions. Their hair restoration treatments are personalized, designed to strengthen your existing hair, encourage regrowth, and improve scalp health. The providers at CAPS guide you every step of the way with advanced treatments for noticeable, long-lasting results. And when you book your first hair restoration appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Think about it. When it comes to your own food, you can walk into a restaurant, see what's being made, and know exactly what you're getting. But with dog food, most brands keep that completely hidden. Just Food for Dogs does the opposite. They've built their entire brand around open kitchens. You can actually walk in and watch them prepare your dog's meals with real human-grade ingredients like chicken, beef, carrots, and peas, cooked right there in front of you. No mystery, no behind the scenes you're not allowed to see. That kind of transparency is rare in the pet food world. And it's a big reason they've become the number one vet-recommended fresh dog food, earning trust from pet parents who want to feel confident in what they're feeding. When a brand is willing to show you exactly how your dog's food is made, it says a lot about the care, quality, and standards behind every meal they produce. Nothing to hide, everything to love. Go to justfoodfordogs.com and get 50% off your first order.